Hello and welcome back to the Veeam Communities podcast. This is episode 122. Hi, it's Michael Cade here. I'm a technical evangelist at Veeam Software after the Alliance's specialization here. So I'm joined here with Pete Fletcher to talk about some cool stuff from VMware.
Hey, Michael. Thanks for having me on, man.
So what we want to talk about today is around something that we've been working on this week at the VMware mothership, and it's around storage policy-based management. And I just want to ask a few questions to Pete as to what that is. So kind of a 101 of SPBM.
Michael, before we get to that, man, I have to say, is this not one of the most beautiful campuses you've ever been on?
Yeah, absolutely. It's lovely. And it just so helps San Francisco's sun is shining out here.
Oh, yeah. The birds are chirping. I mean, we're sitting here overlooking some mountains. I don't know what mountains they are, but they are gorgeous. This is nice. I need to come and work here. So what was your question?
Yeah, so let's start by giving our listeners a bit of a 101 on what SPBM is and what it's going to do and help in the environment. Let's go back. Let's go for the 101 of SPBM first.
Sure, Michael. Yeah. So one of the things that's really popular when you're talking about software-defined storage when it comes to VMware is this thing we call storage policy-based management. This is the storage policy framework that's inside of virtual SAN, vSAN, or virtual volumes. It's also inside of our VAIO, which is vSphere APIs for IO filtering. And what this policy management does is it gives you the ability to very granularly assign specific classes of service to your storage, to your virtual machines. What I mean by that is, traditionally, if you take a traditional BMFS environment where you've got a data store, and you start throwing a bunch of VMs into that one data store, they're all going to get the exact same class of service. So if you've got some SQL servers in there, or if you've got some just front-end web servers, they're all going to get the exact amount of performance, the exact storage characteristics. And I think you and I both know that not every VM is created alike. Some of them have different requirements. And so what some people tend to do before SPBM is they would create multiple data stores, sort of like individual buckets that have different types of storage characteristics assigned to them. But with storage policy-based management, you don't have to do that. Essentially, what you're doing is you've got one big data store, and you're assigning at an individual disk level, not even a VM level. I mean, it takes it a step lower. It's like an individual disk level. You can assign a specific policy. So let's do an example of that. Let's just say we've got a database server. You've got your operating system, your C drive, that might have different storage requirements than, say, the database, which is another drive. And then you might even have a separate drive for, say, logs. Three different disks on one virtual machine. And traditionally, you'd throw those all in one data store with a bunch of other virtual machines, and they'd all contend for I/O and storage services. But with storage policy-based management, what you can do is create individual policies to assign to individual disks. So in the case of the SQL server, you could have an operating system policy that, say, might be on a hybrid array, might have HDD and SSD. So it could use either. Maybe it also has deduplication or encryption enabled on that policy. But maybe on your database server, for the database volume, you've actually got a requirement that it has to be on flash, or it has to be encrypted. And so these are the types of things that you can build in your policies. So when you're building a virtual machine, you assign these policies to the individual disks, and then the virtual machine will create those disks. The virtual machine will then create those VMDKs and those objects for the virtual machine on the appropriate storage and assign the right classes of service. This works with vSAN as well as virtual volumes.
Cool. Yeah, no, so having spent the week with you, Pete, and we've kind of had our heads into vSAN, into vVols, and into these policies. One of the things that you've been asked this week when we've been floating around this cool campus is, when it comes to we've had VMFS, it's not going away. They've just released the VMFS 6. Very much still around. But so what are some of the benefits when it comes to that file system in comparison to, say, vVols or to vSAN? Is there a difference there?
You mean VMFS compared to vVols?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, yeah, there's several differences. One of the big ones is certainly how virtual volumes, for example, and vSAN, for that matter, handle snapshots, right? So they're much more performant. Slightly different vSAN versus vVols. But in the case of virtual volumes, for an example, when you create a snapshot on VMFS, what happens traditionally is you're creating a snapshot, you've got a base VMDK, and then you go ahead and create a snapshot. It's basically a redo log. And all the I/O then goes into that redo log, right? So it starts out with a blank file that starts writing all the I/O into it the minute you create the snapshot. And then say you create another snapshot later, you're going to have another snap VMDK. vSphere is going to automatically point all the I/O to the new snapshot. And so what you end up having is a chain of snapshots that are dependent upon each other that all link to the base VMDK. So when you're looking for a file inside of your virtual machine, you need to traverse all the different snapshots to find the data. So it basically ends up in having low performance, low I/O on your virtual machines. I'm sure a lot of your customers and listeners of this podcast have all probably been through the painful experience of creating a VMware snapshot in the past, leaving it on there for too long, and then coming back to realize, wow, this machine is dog slow. What happened? Only to find out that there's a snapshot sitting on there that needs to go away, right? So vVols really completely does redesign the architecture of how snapshots are done, as well as clones. And so what happens now is, instead of having this VMFS and having this, this VMware file system that manages the snapshot, what we do now is we just completely offload those data services to the array. So when you're inside a VMware and you right-click on a VM, or if you do an API to create a snapshot, what's happening now is the VASA provider, which is the piece of software that handles virtual volumes, when it receives a call to create a snapshot, it immediately creates sends an API call to the array. So this is an array-based snapshot immediately, whether that's copy on write, whatever technology the storage vendor is using to create their immediate, efficient snapshots. That's what's happening when you're doing a snapshot inside of VMware now. And so the key benefits of that are, we no longer have this I/O drag inside of, like you do with VMFS. We're not creating these redo logs and then writing I/O into it. All the I/O always goes into the base VMDK. The read-only snapshot sits to the side. It's only there if you want to actually restore it to that snapshot. And the end result is you create faster snapshots. When you delete a snapshot, it's instantaneous. When you revert to a snapshot, it's near instantaneous. So the ultimate result here with this new architecture is that the performance is just completely skyrocketed to the tune of like 93 to 94% increase in performance when you're taking a snapshot.
Yeah, I guess the benefit for us from a Veeam backup point of view is we take away that VM stun, and because we're offloading the I/O directly down to the storage array to take that snapshot, and then we're pulling the backup out of that, it's instantly going to be a lot faster, it's going to be quicker, it's going to be more performant, and then the same for that restore operation back. And that's one of the things that we've been working on this week, guys, is that's kind of putting this together and showing the differences between the VMFS, the vVol, the and the vSAN, and how our software works different within each one. So let's just rewind back there, Pete, as well, and let's just talk a bit more around this, the VASA provider, and to explain to me. So also there's the protocol endpoint. So can you touch on those two a little?
Sure, yeah. These are new concepts for virtual volumes as it pertains to the architecture of virtual volumes. And so if you're a VMware customer and you're used to your traditional vSphere environment, virtual volumes is almost exactly the same. There are a couple of key differences, and one of them is this VASA provider. Now, what the VASA provider is, it's a piece of software. It can either reside natively on your a specific vendor array, or it can be in the form of a vApp. But basically what it is, it's a piece of software that manages all of the operations as it pertains to your virtual volumes environment. So whether it's creating a new virtual machine and assigning those policies that we talked about earlier, all those policies are strictly adhered to. It all is managed by this VASA provider. Doing all those data services offloading, like the snapshots and the clones, all of that has happened by the management of this. This is the management plane, if you will, of the virtual volumes environment. In traditional environments, the data store was the point in which it was the management plane as well as the data plane for your every virtual machine inside of that data store. We've sort of pulled it apart a little bit. We've pushed all the management into this VASA provider now, so it's not dependent at a data store level. It's all now being done and managing at an individual disk level all of these policies and doing these snapshots, etc. All of that is done through this piece of software called the VASA provider. And as I mentioned, you know, most vendors will actually have this as a piece of software that's on their array. So you're essentially ticking a box, and it's enabling the VASA provider. There are some vendors that will actually you install a VApp. You know, it's slightly more complicated to set up initially, but after it's registered and you're running day one inside of a virtual volumes environment, you don't really think much about it. So that's the VASA provider. The other part you asked about, Michael, was the protocol endpoint. So the protocol endpoint, it's a very, very small LUN. And I know we have a running joke with us is that, you know, LUNs suck, and we don't like to talk about LUNs with virtual volumes because of all the problems that come with LUNs, and there's a ton of them, right? But no, the protocol endpoint is actually, it's a 4 megabyte LUN. It's not a data LUN. It's essentially, it has a secondary LUN ID on it that has a very specific job. It's almost like the post office, if you will. It holds the addresses of the location of all of the different objects that pertain to each individual virtual machine. So your data volume, your config vvol, your swap file, you know, your memory, your snapshots, all those individual objects that belong to the virtual machine, these are all native objects that are stored on the array. You know, there's no VMFS, there's no file system. So the VASA provider uses this little protocol endpoint. It accesses it like almost like a phone book, if you will, just to see, oh, these individual objects belong to VM1 or VM2, right? So when the virtual machine gets powered on, you know, all of that happens, you know, the VASA provider then talks to the protocol endpoint and says, hey, which objects do I need to connect up into this virtual machine inside of my vCenter environment? Which ones need to be connected so I can do these binding operations when I power on a virtual machine? And so all of that happens with this little LUN called the protocol endpoint.
Great stuff. From a licensing point of view, let's stick on the vVols thing. So if I was if I'm a customer, let's say I've got a Nimble array or a HPE 3PAR array,
aren't they the same thing now?
We probably should cut that, or maybe not.
No, of course not. We don't cut it. We're going live.
So from a licensing point of view, so I'm a customer today, and I'm vSphere 6.5 all up to date, and I'm running my environment on there, and I've got my three-par array, and I've got my Nimble array, both vVol capable. What licensing do I need for a vVol implementation?
Well, when it comes to vVols, there are no extra licenses. vVols is essentially a feature inside of vSphere. So as long as you got any version of vSphere, you're able to run virtual volumes. You basically, it's just a feature inside of vSphere. There's no extra licensing involved. Now, where licensing does come into play is if you're trying to do those data services, those snapshots and those clones. If you own a storage vendor like Nimble 3PAR, or maybe some of the other ones, you're going to have to pay for their technologies. You know, if there's a license that they have for creating clones or doing snapshots, unless you have those licenses, it'll still work. You're just going to be creating a full copy, right? So it won't actually use the efficiencies that you get from these storage arrays. So most vendors probably already have those licenses in place for their storage arrays. Those are not vVol specific. We leverage those efficiencies from the Nimble or all of the storage arrays. You just need to bring BYOL, I guess.
Right, cool. So it's a case of saying, right, I've got my vSphere physical hardware, I've got my vSphere 6.5 vCenter running the latest version, I've got my array tick, I've got my vSphere components tick, and it's just a case of enabling that on the actual VCSA. Is there anything I need to install on there? Is there anything, obviously you deploy that VASA provider out there, get it talking to your array, get it talking to your vCenter, and then you've already mentioned around creating the, and it comes down to what array as to how the pool of storage looks, or how the vVol looks within the storage array. So there's some going to be volumes, there's some going to be MDIS, etc. It depends how they carve out that partition within their storage array. But is that it? And then you start creating your policies, and then off you go, you start creating them virtual machines based on those policies, and the array then does that work and all that good stuff.
Yeah, so the beautiful thing, and you know, some people are like, oh man, I bet you storage administrators don't like vVols because this is like, you know, job security or whatever the case. Storage administrators absolutely love vVols. And the reason is, day zero is the day that they're involved when it comes to setting up virtual volumes, right? They do, instead of having to, I like to say, instead of being in a retail model, they're now in a wholesale model. So the retail model is, you know, every day that the virtual administrator needs a new LUN, you know, he's got this pre-allocated LUN that he's been using. He runs out of space. So then he needs to go to the storage administrator and say, hey, I'm sorry, but I need another one of those, right? So then the storage administrator then needs to carve and mask LUNs for the virtual administrator. And then he has to reassign which characteristics he wants on that individual LUN. And it's a retail model. He has to do it every single LUN that he creates. And you know, some of these environments that we deal with can have hundreds, you know, even 1,000 LUNs, right? So, but with virtual volumes, what we do, the storage administrator, from day zero, he's not pre-allocating space up front. All he's doing is he's creating what we call a storage container. Now, that looks different to the different storage vendors, what the storage container is. But there is no space consumed up front. This is essentially a quota. He's creating sort of metadata, if you will, that says this storage container will let my virtual infrastructure consume X amount of space. And then once he's created that storage container and assigned the storage capabilities, publishes those storage capabilities that his array can do, you know, like some of them can do replication, some of them can do encryption, some of them do quality of service. So whatever the storage can do, those capabilities are published in this storage container. That's all it does, is it manages the size of the storage container and what capabilities the virtual administrator can now consume when he starts creating his VM storage policies. So day zero, storage administrator creates this storage container. Then after that, the virtual administrator creates a data store, links it to this storage container, and then he can start rocking and rolling. Like it's a wholesale model now. What he's doing is he's creating by himself, without bothering the storage administrator, he's creating policies. You know, I know you don't like the gold, silver, bronze example, but I'm going to use it just for simplicity of this conversation. You know, we can swap this with, you know, operating system, database, if you like. But the point is, the virtual administrator can define what storage policies he wants to use for his virtual machines. So they can be very application-centric. He can have a gold or a silver, or maybe he has an operating system policy, and then maybe he has a database policy. So he creates these policies. No storage has been consumed yet. Now, the virtual administrator creates his very first virtual machine. He's going through the wizard. He selects what new machine, names it, selects from a drop-down box which storage policy he wants to assign. Those policies that he's already created, he then selects one of those, and that's when, the moment he does that, the VASA provider gets word that you want to provision this virtual machine, and then it looks for a database that meets all the requirements that the storage policy is dictating, and then it provisions individual virtual volumes that are stored on this array. So it's a much more efficient way of provisioning storage and managing your storage, because you're not pre-allocating any storage. And then even when you delete your virtual machine, even if you delete files within the guest, virtual volumes is going to go and do that space reclamation for you. So it's going to do the unmap. It's going to make sure that there is no wasted space orphaned on your array. So it's a much more efficient way of doing that. And storage administrators love that. They love the fact that they're not wasting space. They also love the fact that they don't have to keep doing these little, you know, these little tasks of carving out LUNs and recreating all the storage characteristics on each LUN. Why do that, you know, multiple times when you can do it once and forget it?
That sounds like a pretty good VMworld session right there, Pete, to start talking about how the life of a storage admin is affected by this new era, this new profile-driven storage. So, just to kind of wrap things up here as well, and take another angle to begin with. So you've recently just been enrolled on the Veeam Vanguard program. So,
oh, yeah.
So have a bit of a chat as to how, so I know that you're also a member of the NetApp A team along with myself, so very much out there within the community, very much like putting content out, speaking, publicly speaking, jumping on podcasts here, there and everywhere. What does, not specifically the Vanguard program, but what do these community programs mean to you, and how do you get stuff out of that, as well as putting all of what you do back in with your own like podcast and all of this content that you're delivering?
That's a great question. So for me, you know, when I first got into this community, this IT as a profession, I really leaned on the community heavily to learn. You know, you start Googling and all of a sudden you start coming out, you know, in the early days I would come out with, you know, Duncan Epping's Yellow Bricks or William Lamb's blogs or Chris Wall. You come and you see these guys that are writing about content, Alan Renouf writing about Power CLI. And you know, there are certain people that have all of these awesome skills, and then they would just give back by writing. And I've interviewed a lot of those guys, actually. And one of the things that I always hear from them is that they started themselves by writing stuff that they didn't want to forget. You know, they spent all this work trying to figure something out, so they decided to write it. But ultimately, what they did was give back to this community. And that made the community stronger, smarter. And I thought, you know, and I think that's a really genuine and great thing to do. Is if you're really working hard at something, it's a waste of time and effort to just leave it in your head or sitting on your own little OneNote in your computer. Blog about it, share it with the world, because someone else out there is going to have that same problem. You know, so I started to do the same. I started to learn, I started to blog, started to do the podcast, as you know, the V-Speaking podcast, because I found that there are a lot of smart people out there, much smarter than I am, and I thought, what a great way to have a medium like a podcast where you can invite people that have been working hard on a specific subject matter, and then give them an opportunity to share that so other people can then benefit from that. So I'm a big fan of things like blogging, podcasting, and sharing your content. Now, when it comes to advocacy programs, you know, there are a couple of different types of advocacy programs, and I'm very selective on which ones I will join, because the truth is while there are a lot of companies out there, you know, I don't love them all, but I appreciate a lot of them. But Veeam has been around for a very long time. I've been talking about Veeam on my own podcast. I've interviewed folks like Rickatron, and I've been a fan of what you guys are doing in the VMware space when it comes to backup and replication. And so, you know, the opportunity to come and join like-minded folks like, you know, like the folks that work at Veeam, but also some of the other customers like my co-host, John Nicholson, another big fan of Veeam. You know, to me, it was a no-brainer. I was like, I'm already advocating for software and for a company that I believe in. You know, so why not join a group of advocates and make that a little bit more focused? And so it's an exciting opportunity to be on such an elite group like the Veeam Vanguard. And I'm looking forward to doing really cool things with you guys. So shameless plug here. Mm-hmm. If you go to vspeakingpodcast.com, or if you just Google virtually speaking podcast, either way, you'll come across our podcast. You know, John Nicholson and I, we both work in the storage and availability business unit here at VMware. You know, we focus heavily on storage and availability, but we have, you know, we have fun conversations with really smart people. You know, they're not just VMware employees that we get. We try to get, you know, external folks like Veeam and other folks to come on as well and share what they're doing as well. And so, you know, we usually have a conversation with these folks. We have more questions than we have answers. That's my motto is, you know, the host of a podcast should not try to be the smartest person. And that's not my role. My role is to find out who the smart person is, get them on the podcast, and learn from them, because I think that's the most productive way to do a podcast. So that's what we do. We have a little fun doing it. So if you can't take a joke, then you might not want to listen to our podcast, because we do kind of clown around a little bit. But yeah, it's. But if you want to nerd out with us, we're at vspeakingpodcast.com.
Cool. No worries about a shameless plug there, mate. So one thing that we've got coming up we've submitted call for papers for VeeamON, right? So another shameless plug right here is VeeamON is our conference that's going to be running in New Orleans this year, and it's May the 16th to May the 18th. So a couple of days there, just listening about data protection, availability for the always on enterprise, and being able to understand things from our ecosystem partners. So VMware are going to be there, along with all of the all of our storage vendor integrations. They're going to be down there and really understand and hear. Let's go deep dives into those technical tunnels that you don't necessarily get to hear about on the Veeam Live shows or out there with your local SEs and stuff. So we've submitted a session and it's called the availability in a profile driven world. So no guesses as to what me and Pete are going to be trying to talk about there. So one of the things that we want to kind of demonstrate there is what are the options around. So absolutely, like, so sounds great. VVols, SPVM sounds absolutely the next gen, the future of vSphere storage, if you like. So one of the things though on top of that is how do we protect that data, and specifically with Veeam, how do we protect that data and keep that availability message there within that piece. We're going to be talking about the best practices, the architecture requirements for that, and also just that education piece, so understanding how easy it is from a vSphere admin's point of view to start implementing this, and then how we can, from a Veeam or a backup admin's point of view, is how can we leverage that and start taking a full advantage of this new storage.
Yeah. Now, but because we're not in sales and we believe in the tech, you know, we don't really care about the sales part of it. We're going to also, you know, we're going to lift the curtain and also share some of the limitations, some of the things that are, you know, that are going to be working later that may not be working right now. You know, small things, but that's the idea. You know, to me, a good session is a session that's completely genuine and honest. I can go and learn something, but I can also see, you know, what's missing and what I need to watch out for myself and what's coming down the road. So, you know, I think what we're going to try and do on our session is certainly we're going to show state of the union of virtual volumes and vSAN, and then also and Veeam, and show, you know, what works now and how it works, why it works, and then what's coming in the future. So I, you know, without giving roadmap information too much, you know, but we will definitely share vision statements, no dates, but I think it's going to be a great session. I'm looking forward to it.
So I guess before we go, where can the guys find you on Twitter or your own blog site? In fact, there's one thing, this cool resource that you guys work on in your the storage and availability team that we've kind of been playing around with this week, and it's got so much content in there. You've got a team of absolute ninjas when it comes to getting content out, and it looks really, really smart and cool. But we need people to be looking at that and consuming this awesome stuff. So where can people find that to begin with?
Yeah, for sure. So we have this this site called storagehub.vmware.com. And what this is the technical marketing rock stars, you know, like Jeff Hunter, G.S. Guersman, John Nicholson, Jace McCarty, Ken Wernerberg, myself, and other folks, you know, even Duncan and Cormac, we're contributing content, technical content, not marketing, you know, fluff. You know, they're just the real technical content, whether it's design and sizing guides, networking, things like that. You know, frequently asked questions, things like that. Very technical content for all these different software, whether it's vSAN, virtual volumes, SRM, Metro Cluster, things like vSphere, Stretch Cluster. And so all of that content can be found on storagehub.vmware.com. So be sure to go out there and check out that content. As far as my Twitter handle, I'm at vpedroarrow.com. No, I never worked for the company Arrow. You know, the secret is that my real name is Pete Fletcher, and if you invert that, because it is Spanish, it would actually be Pedro Arrow. So it's vpedroarrow is my Twitter handle, and my own personal blog that I almost never go to anymore is Pedro's Arrow with an S, Pedro's Arrow. So I need to be better about blogging in my personal one, because the top 100 vblogs are coming out soon, so I need to get some stuff out there. But I usually blog at the corporate VMware site, which is Virtual Blocks. So if you Google Virtual Blocks, you'll find a lot of our technical blogs from the storage and availability business unit out there. So Virtual Blocks is the place to go.
Mate, it's been an awesome 3 days, like, kicking about in the not so sunny Palo Alto, but it's been awesome to start getting some content together. Hopefully you guys will be able to start seeing this stuff that we're working on. Podcast is coming first, then we're going to have VMon, then we're going to have VMworld, and in between that we're going to have some awesome papers and stuff to share with you guys. So yeah, you can obviously find me over at michaelcade1 on Twitter. My blog's at vzilla.co.uk.